This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Here's an update on the latest from Apple. If you are just joining us, some news about 1 hour and 20 minutes ago that Apple will hire 20,000 new workers and produce AI servers in the United States. The company planning to spend $500 billion domestically over the next 4 years, including work on a new server manufacturing facility in Houston and additional spending with its existing suppliers. What does this mean relative to what we've already heard over the last several years from Apple? Mark Gurman, our star reporter here at Bloomberg, saying that Apple is going from investing $86 billion a year to $125 in the US, and from hiring 4,000 R&D employees a year to 5,000 based on its prior 5-year commitments compared to the new 4-year commitment announced this morning.
So there you have a Bloomberg report on the news coming out of Apple and a new investment in the United States. And I'll just tell you that the lower third on this Bloomberg report says Apple, under threat from Trump tariffs, will add 20,000 U.S. jobs. Let's get to our economic expert. Our friend Steve Moore joins us once again, distinguished fellow in economics at the Heritage Foundation, also a Trump economic advisor. Steve, welcome back to the show. Happy Monday.
Hi, Annie. Good to be with you. Thanks so much for having me. And that is great news about 20,000 new high-paying technology jobs here in the United States. I think it's the start of something big.
Well, you know, I know that Steve Moore is a free trade guy. I get that. We've heard that from you many times. But the Donald Trump economic plan in motion does seem to, we've seen, you know, week after week, people say we're going to invest billions of dollars back into the United States. What does that do for the economy when people start coming to America?
Well, this has been really the secret of the success of the American economy for the last 40 years since Reagan was president, is that so much investment from around the world comes to the United States because we are, you know, we are the best place to invest in. And when you have a president who is, you know, going to deregulate, going to cut taxes on our businesses, you know, get better trade deals, that incentivizes businesses to move here. And, you know, it's exciting that now we have businesses moving into the United States rather than leaving the United States, you know, and I'm excited about this. The other obviously big news here in Washington, D.C., I'm in the swamp, is that, you know, there is this order from Elon for everybody to go back to work, all the federal employees.
Yeah.
And if you can't name 5 things you did that were productive in the previous week, you may not have a job this week. So it's about time we put, you know, some restraints on this outrageous federal octopus of our federal bureaucracy, which is, you know, 2 million workers. A lot of them can't even say what they do. And it's about time we rein in this kind of arrogant civil service system that's really self-serving and not serving the American public.
Steve Moore speaking with us right now. One of the things I heard Elon say and other people report on regarding his efforts to say, hey, send us an email, list 5 things you do, is that they suspect that there are people who may be on the payroll who don't even check their email and maybe aren't actually doing any work. And if you don't get an email back from some of these employees, that might be a great way to weed them out.
Well, you know, have you heard about this software that moves your mouse for you on your computer so it looks like... So I think a lot of federal employees are using that so they can be out on the tennis court or the golf course, and then the employer, you know, sees their mouse moving on their computer screen. They think, oh, they're at work. So this is going to be... This kind of back-to-work order, I think, is long overdue. How many times have we talked about this over the last 2 years that, you know, less than 20% of the federal employees have been showing up full-time, you know, on the job? And so there's going to be, we need to dramatically reduce the federal workforce. And I don't like to see people lose their jobs. I don't, you know, I've lost my job and, you know, that's always a traumatic experience, but we have way, way too many people working in the federal bureaucracy, and we want more private sector jobs and less government jobs. And so some people are going to lose their jobs. And by the way, they're getting a sweet deal, Annie. They're getting 8 months severance pay, 8 months. Who gets that in the private sector?
No, that's unheard of, really.
Unheard of, yes, exactly. It's unheard of. I mean, most people maybe get, if you've got a generous employer, you might get 3 months, maybe 6 months. A lot of them you get, 4 weeks. And so 8 months plus, as soon as that 8 months is up, they get federal retirement benefits, which are much sweeter than what people get in the private sector. I think a lot of private sector workers are angry that their paychecks go to people who, or in similar jobs, get paid much more than they do, both in salary and benefits.
Yeah, I think that's completely right. And I think that people are paying more attention now than ever to where their tax dollars go. And a lot of that has to do, of course, with DOGE. I've got the debt clock pulled up here right now, Steve Moore, for people who are watching us on
what
our
are we
YouTube
at?
Channel.
I'm afraid to ask, what are we at now?
On the debt, $36.5
trillion. $36.5
trillion. Yes. And the DOGE clock, which they've added there, is up to $132 billion, because that's part of this clock right now.
In savings.
I've never...
You know what? I can't wait for those clocks to intersect so that the savings actually exceed the debt.
Yeah. And you know, from what I understand, the savings that it's going to take a minute, but the savings that are coming in through DOGE, can you explain that they've discussed the possibility of a 20% dividend to the taxpayer, 20% of the savings that goes to the debt. And then Steve Miller said last week at a press conference that the other 60% would be applied to, I guess, the next year's budget. In your mind, when you see this DOGE clock ticking up over $132 billion right now, it goes up 100,000 about every 2 seconds. What do you make of all of this money that's being clawed back by Elon Musk and his team? What should happen?
Well, about time. You know, I've been waiting for this moment for 40 years. And, you know, I have to say that Trump is doing something that, you know, John F. Kennedy was not able to do, that Ronald Reagan wasn't able to do. Bill Clinton, remember reinventing government? Remember that?
Yeah.
You know, all of these things were going to rein in the federal bureaucracy. And even great presidents fail at doing that because we have a massive government self-serving bureaucracy under the civil service system where it's almost impossible to fire someone from the federal government. Did you know that?
Yeah.
It's almost impossible until Trump came into town. And that's why they're so indignant. How dare you, you know, fire me? I have a lifetime tenure. Nobody except teachers unions and government employee unions get those kind of lifetime benefits. We all, you know, you and I could be fired at the hot drop of a hat, right? Yeah. If we don't do our job. And so now they have to live under the same rules that people in the private sector do. And they're going, I got to tell you, people run around this town like their hair is on fire. Oh my God, we have to show up for work. Oh my God, we have to actually prove we do something that's, you know, that's efficient and effective and pro taxpayer. So I'm very pleased about this. I cannot understand why. You've got to explain this to me, Amy. Annie, why is it that the left, the people like Elizabeth Warren and AOC and Chuckie Schumer, they're going crazy. They're defending wasting government. I don't get that. If you believe in big government, wouldn't you be against wasting money?
Unless they're benefiting from it. I mean, that's the
exactly.
alarm. That's the alarm
Thank
bell
you.
That goes off for me. It makes me want to look a little bit closer.
Yes. I think you just I just think you pin the tail right on that donkey.
I mean, well said.
You know, you're exactly right, because they are the beneficiaries of the waste. And it goes, a lot of that money goes right into the coffers of the unions, of the special interest groups. You saw what happened with the $20 billion, not $20 million, $20 billion. I mentioned this last week on your show, that went out weeks before the Trump people could come in. So they rushed it out of the gates. It all went to these climate action network left-wing groups. That then actually we found out that some of this money was actually used to run ads against Donald Trump, which is illegal.
Right. Of course. One last question before we let you go. Steve Moore speaking with us right now. I noticed that you posted on your X account a Forbes article, and it's questioning the Republicans' focus on making sure that those tax cuts become permanent. And there's one other thing I want to highlight from this article and just give you the floor to talk about it. It's like the fifth paragraph says, some Republicans are getting lost in theatrical displays of fiscal virtue, demanding massive spending cuts without specifics. But then it goes on to say they're missing the lesson of post-World War II America. We tackled a debt to GDP ratio even higher than today's through economic growth. And I wanted to give you the opportunity to speak to those permanent tax cuts and what economic growth will do to our economy.
So you're exactly right that you've had so much delay in passing this tax cut, and it's got to be done, or else. Are you ready for this? Are you sitting down?
I am.
Annie? You know, if we don't get this done, the American people will face the largest tax increase in American history over 10 years at $4.5 trillion tax increase on the American people. And not just rich people, everybody is going to get hit. The average family in America is going to pay $3,000 more in taxes. It's going to be much more complicated. You're going to have to itemize your deductions again. We're bringing back the alternative minimum tax. Twice as many families will be hit by the unfair death tax. I mean, I could go on and on about how sinister this would be. I don't understand why Democrats would want to raise $4.5 trillion in taxes. I mean, does that make sense?
No. When I hear tax cuts, I often think, OK, well, how are we going to pay for everything? The other part of that is that the economic growth that this country will experience is going to provide.
There you go. We know that from what happened when Reagan cut taxes. We know that what happened when Trump cut taxes. The economy exploded with growth. I mean, people forget. Remember how good the economy was in 2019 before COVID hit?
Yeah.
I mean, it was like one of the best economies ever. So this is going to work. But I think the one thing that could, you know, destroy the Republican Party and do great damage to our country, and that's the more important thing, is not to get this tax cut done. I am frustrated with my friends in the Senate who are taking too long to get this done. They just passed a budget resolution last week. You may have followed this. There's no tax cut in that bill, and they actually increased spending.
That's probably why Rand Paul voted against it, I would think.
There you go. If Rand Paul's voting against something, it's probably a bad bill. That's a good rule of thumb.
Yeah. Steve Moore, thank you for your time today. We appreciate you. We look forward to having you back again next week.
Thank you, Annie.
Take care. Bye-bye. Senior Visiting Fellow for Economics at the Heritage Foundation. You know, everyone's like, since Donald Trump's taken the oath of office and he's been the president, we're all sitting around and high-fiving all of the time, all over the place. And we're like, yeah, we won, victory. And I'm sitting here along with Steve Moore, and then I'm reading this article Steve Forbes wrote on Forbes.com, and it's explaining it in a way that even I can economically understand. Republicans in Congress, get to it. Get it done. This isn't hard.
Thank you.
Get it done.
What the heck? Like, don't just be like, well, we're going to trim a little bit this year because we have a mandate. No, you have an actual mandate to reform everything.
And don't, I'd never want to be disrespectful of Steve Moore's time. They usually tell us he's got 10 minutes and he's a national figure and he usually squeezes us in Fox News hits. So I always want to be respectful of his time. But in the event that you pass a budget and you cut. And you invest in, you've got people like Apple, like we just talked in. That was a story that you had teed up for Wiggins America, too. This investment that Apple is making is significant in the United States, but Apple's not the only one doing it. There's a ton of different places that are doing this. The investment, again, in this Forbes article, it talks about the tackling the debt to GDP ratio that was higher than today's debt to ratio post-World War II, that through economic growth, not austerity, the ratio fell from debt to GDP. The ratio post-World War II fell from 121% after the war to 35% by the early 1970s because assets grew faster than liabilities.
That's cool.
A massive, like, I am not an economist in any way, shape, or form. I require us to have any sort of fiscal economic experts on the show, because when I ask questions, a lot of times when I ask questions, especially if it's politics, I pretty much know the answer. I know what they should say. They don't always say it, but I usually have a pretty good idea of what the answer is before I ask it. When it comes to the economy, I don't. When it comes to having Andy McCarthy and Greg Jarrett and our legal experts on the show, I don't know the legal answers because I'm not a lawyer. I don't know these things. And we're grateful to have access to these people who do have the answers. But when I see that, and then I'm thinking, like, well, obviously, you're going to cut taxes. You're going to let the American people invest in themselves instead of trying to turn the money over to a overly bloated United States government that doesn't really care about the American taxpayer at the end. Obviously, we're seeing evidence of that over and over and over again right now through DOGE. Get them back to the place where, guys, we have to fund the bare minimum. We don't have the funds to be sending condoms to Zimbabwe or wherever it was that we were, Mozambique. We don't have those funds available to us. We have to fortify our military. That's the basic stuff. Why can't we cut? Can't Congress always vote to appropriate more money if necessary?
As far as I understand it, they can.
They pass a spending bill. They do it for Ukraine.
Well,
you need to send $30-50 billion more to Ukraine because they really need it.
That's true.
We
pass an appropriations.
So if you find out you need to send more money to education, to agriculture, to whatever it is, and it's really for the people, then it should pass.
And Ryan Schmelz told us last week that this bill would only get you through September. So do what you need to do now and just readdress it in September if you don't like something.
Republicans, go all the way for the end zone. You have to score now. You cannot wait. Do not punt. Now is the time to get the job done to the extent with which Republicans, how many times you say, well, why didn't you do it? Why didn't Joe Biden get stuff done? If Democrats thought it was so good, why didn't he do it in his first 2 years when he had Congress and he had the Oval Office? They should have gotten it done then and they didn't. And then they like whine him like, Republicans won't work with us. Well, get that ish done right now while you have the Congress and the Oval Office in the first 2 years of Donald Trump's presidency. Get it done. Stop messing around. And for the people who are holding out saying, oh, no, we need more cuts. We need more cuts. Figure it out. And listen to what Donald Trump is saying. He's the one you have to follow. He's the one with the mandate. And if it doesn't go far enough because Trump didn't push far enough, then that'll be on him. But you got to get it done.
I didn't know that the Senate cut nothing. I've been watching the House version, and they're all big fiscal conservatives. We cut $2 trillion from the budget. Yeah, over 10 years. You're $2 trillion shy this year. So you're cutting, what, 10% of the deficit? Not the budget, just the deficit. It's crazy how little they're cutting.
Steve Forbes says in this article, too, and this is an article that we got off Steve Moore's X profile, so you can go check it out there. The current House debate over reconciliation bills, whether to do one or two, misses the point entirely. While they argue over 10-year scoring numbers and budget parameters, they're wasting precious time that could be used to boost economic growth. Going back to the previous paragraph, when we're talking about the economic growth of the United States, reviving the country post-World War II, the focus should be on lowering marginal tax rates, the rates you pay on your next dollar earned, which directly impacts economic incentives. I don't know this. Steve Forbes guy, does he know anything?
He has a magazine. He hosted Saturday Night Live once.
Have you ever been on a magazine? Have you ever been in a magazine?
The ones at Six Flags.
And break.
They only cost like $12 back in the day. I don't know what they'd be now.
Probably $62. Illinois State Representative Dave Freeze, you're going to like this one. Your Republican Southern Illinois State Representative David Freeze tied for first for best David Freeze in the area, maybe?
I agree.
When he says that he has introduced legislation to repeal Illinois' FOID card requirement. Let's talk to him about that when we come back. Don't go away.
And once again, I think this is... is the third time Illinois' firearm owner ID, the FOID card, has been declared unconstitutional and wrong by a court. There's some nuances here, but the big question is, do you think Illinois lawmakers will do anything?
So that's a huge question. The FOID card is something, if you live in the state of Illinois and you have ever had to buy ammunition, you need a FOID card. So a lot of you listening right now do have it. You know you need to have it, and you hate it. You hate everything about it. I'm one of those people. Sounds like maybe Illinois State Representative David Freese is another one of those individuals, because David Freese, Illinois State Representative in the 116th District, has introduced a bill that would repeal the FOID card requirement. And we're speaking right now with Representative David Freese on the show. Thank you for being here, Representative. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
Well,
and yeah, I hate the FOID card.
That is a sentiment, I'm sure, from a lot of your constituents in Southern Illinoisans. They're very frustrated by it. Let's just take it all the way to the beginning. What is the FOID card? Why is it necessary? And why are you trying to eliminate the requirement?
So it's mandated by state legislature, and you need a firearm identification card, which means that you have to have that card just to possess a gun or ammunition. Personally, Second Amendment, you got a right to bear arms. I don't think that we need it. I don't think it's a requirement. I know there's been litigation over this issue, and my hope is that they actually find it unconstitutional. I should not have to have the Second Amendment plus is the way I look at it.
Hmm. That's a really good way of putting it. I know there was a recent court case, and the details, I hope I get the details correctly, but somebody had a firearm in their house. I think that maybe there was a marriage that was a separation or something. And it turned out that the court ruled that they didn't need to have a FOID card to have the firearm in their house in the state of Illinois. But you're saying it's the Second Amendment plus. What is the, in order to get a FOID card, you got to get it from the state of Illinois. What's the process that they filter you through in order to say, yes, Annie, you can have a FOID card?
But you got to go fill out the paperwork. It goes to the state police. They run a background check on you. You check all the right boxes, make sure you're not a convicted felon, don't have a domestic battery against you. And then they say, then the state police gives you their blessing that says, yes, you can now have this identification, which gives you the legal right to purchase a firearm or ammunition.
Okay. So, you know, I'm a partner here with STS Armory in there in Pontoon Beach, Illinois, and I've bought firearms from them before. I have my FOID card. My recollection is that when I go to purchase a firearm, that I got to wait a little bit in order to get it, depending on the kind of firearm that I've purchased. What happens in that time? Well, of course, I show them, I've always had to show them my FOID card. So I show them that I have this qualification from the state of Illinois, but then I have to wait. What's happening in that waiting period before I'm able to purchase and acquire that firearm?
It's a good question. So here's what I know. You go fill out paperwork to purchase that firearm, and they should be able to run a background check on you immediately. I know there's a waiting period this because I think part of the reasoning for that is they don't want somebody to get in an argument with their spouse. Oh, and they don't have a firearm. Now they're going to go out and buy a firearm and shoot their spouse because they're mad at him or her. So I think there's this waiting, cooling off period. But my understanding, you go, it doesn't matter what, if you go to an FFL, you go to Walmart, Bass Pro, you fill out the paperwork, they can run that check on you right there. So there's, again, there's no reason for any waiting period. There's no reason for a FOID card. It needs to go away.
So you're telling me that the FOID card runs a background check on you, and then you go to get a gun and they run a background check on you. So it's not like the absence of the FOID card means that they're just going to be handing out guns willy-nilly to everybody.
No. And again, I'm not sure. I've had a FOID card for quite a while. Honestly, I don't know when this was implemented, what the rationale was behind it at that time. But I think most people in the state of Illinois, if you own a firearm, we're done.
Yeah, I agree. So it is. I think you calling it Second Amendment plus is a good way to look at it. There got to be Democrats in the state of Illinois. I know there are Democrats listening to the show right now who are in the state of Illinois who think the FOID card is dumb. What kind of support do you expect to have on this legislation? Will it get a vote? Could you get bipartisan support?
Probably will not. So here's what I've learned. I still consider myself a relatively newbie to the General Assembly. There's legislations that individual Democrats may support, but they will never get on a bill, support a bill, because what would happen if they did, it would go against leadership, and then they're going to get primary. So, you know, you line up with a Democrat may line up with leadership 9 times out of 10, but if you step out of line, you're going to get primary. So
in the 112th district, which is the district I used to be in, and for some reason they drew a circle around my house and booted me out of the 112th, where Katie Stewart is the representative. She's a Democrat in a very purple Madison County area right here in the listenership. I imagine there's a lot of people in the 112th right now who think that the FOID card is unconstitutional. They don't like it and they would want to see it go away. But you're telling me that Katie Stewart, a Democrat in the 112th district, is going to listen to leadership and not her constituents on this issue?
I mean, I can't speak for Katie on this particular issue, but I know that legislation as a whole, that's the way it's viewed in Springfield. Yes.
Yes.
Unfortunately. And you should be able to, you know, vote for a bill, support a bill, because that's what your constituents want. But again, if you step out of line, you don't toe the line, you will get a primary.
Yeah, that's frustrating. I guess if people are listening right now, they should reach out to their representatives and tell them to support your bill. Maybe join on to your bill and work to Republican or Democrat alike. Anybody who's in the listening area right now in the state of Illinois, if you'd like to see the FOID card be repealed, Illinois State Representative David Freese is trying to lead that charge. And I'm sure you would take Republicans and Democrats alike if they wanted to help sponsor and get this thing through.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You get on ILGA and you can file witness slips in support of it. Not only this bill, but any legislation. And witness slips carry some weight. So I would encourage everybody to do that. You hear a bill coming down and you're like, hey, I want to support that. Get on the ILGA website and file a witness slip. Absolutely.
That's a good piece of advice. We're speaking with Illinois State Representative David Freese. And, you know, I'm interested in hearing your thoughts as well on the budget process. Governor Pritzker came to Springfield, called Donald Trump Hitler, essentially.
Yep.
Didn't want to support the Nazi agenda, wants to make sure that he clearly states that the people of Illinois that are not citizens will be protected and funded by the taxpayers of the state of Illinois. And yet it seems as though we have a budget shortfall. What were your thoughts on what Governor Pritzker, when he gave that address to the General Assembly, what did you take away from that?
So first of all, I was absolutely amazed, because leading up to the budget address, we were $3.2 billion in the red. We get there and we listen in the day before, lo and behold, well, now it's a balanced budget. So everybody's like, well, how the hell does this happen? It's I don't know if you would call it accounting gimmicks or whatever, because your budget, my budget, the household budget, we don't spend money that we don't make. Okay. And we bank, you know, money and we save. Government budgets are done on projections. You know, well, they anticipate they're going to make X amount of money or bring, they don't make it. They actually take it from us. So they're going to take X amount of money from us so they can spend that. Well, if there's downturns in the economy or the revenue isn't there, they still spend it, it seems like. And then what they end up doing is they end up raising our taxes or service fees or something. Revenue enhancements is a new phrase, what they want to use in Springfield now.
Yeah, it's frustrating to watch. My understanding is that the Illinois government has never taken more money than they're taking right now from the Illinois taxpayer. The burden is very high.
$55 billion
coming out of our pockets here in a state tax burden that we have. And it's a shortfall. And we're funding things that a lot of Illinoisans don't support. I also understand we're speaking right now with Illinois State Representative David Freese. I previously said 116th district. Your new district is the 115th. So my apologies for that. My understanding is that the progressive income tax is a suggestion that's being thrown back out there for consideration. The state voted it down once before, but now they're suggesting maybe we move to that progressive income tax. What can you tell us about that?
Well, that's always a topic of discussion. They want to, quote, tax the rich. I don't know about you, but I've never worked for a poorer person. So I don't have a problem with people making money. I don't have a problem with people being rich. You know, it doesn't make you happy. But we shouldn't punish them either, because those are our employers. Those they own our businesses. They run our economy. They really do. And what happens in our state is because of the burdensome tax regulation, business regulations, people go, look, I'm going to move my business to Missouri, Kentucky, Tennessee, because you have one, you have less regulation and you have a lower tax burden. There's a reason why people are leaving our state, and that is it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that I hope that Illinoisans, the ones who are left in the state compared to the last time that this was a vote that was on a statewide ballot, I hope that people are paying attention to it. J.B. Pritzker does not have the taxpayer, the Illinois taxpayer, in mind when he is when he is governing the state. He spends his time in Chicago. He doesn't understand what anybody south of I-80, I don't even know if he cares outside of Cook County, because he can win the re-election for governor as a non-term limited position in the state of Illinois by winning Cook County strong enough. I'm wondering what your sentiment is, Representative Freeze, when you talk to people. Of course, you're in Southern Illinois here in the 115th district, but people are seeing what Donald Trump is doing. People are seeing what Elon Musk is doing on a national level. And J.B. Pritzker has put himself out there to be kind of the number one. He'd like to be the number one go-to opposition for what Trump stands for. Do you feel as though people in the state of Illinois are maybe considering now more than they have before that the Democrat J.B. Pritzker supermajority of Democrats in the General Assembly way is not the right way for Illinoisans?
I feel a change. I don't know if it's big enough tide change to make a difference. But so I was looking at actually some numbers over the weekend. Clinton won by 17% in Illinois. Biden won by 17. Kamala Harris only won by 11%. Okay, so that gap narrowed, and I think that the funding of all this stuff for illegal immigration, that has really made a large part of the Democrat core base just infuriated. I mean, they're mad as hell. There's no other way to put it.
Yeah.
So my hope is that we can now we've got to be proactive. We can't just sit back and expect them to come to us. We've got to go out and we've got to recruit those individuals and say, hey, look, you've been voting Democrat for, you know, this election, that election. Come to the Republican Party. This is what we can do for you as Republicans to support you in your mission. I mean, I don't care what color your skin is. What do you want? You want safe neighborhoods. You want good schools. And you want honest days wages for honest days, you know, work. So let's advocate for that. And let's put policies in place that support those individuals.
Is the Illinois Republican Party in a position right now? Are they capable of conveying that message, a very concise, targeted, specific message to Illinois voters across the state that they are a reasonable alternative to the status quo?
That's a great question. I think there are some of us that are. I know I personally have been advocating people within our leadership to say, hey, look, we have got to do something. You know, Kevin Schmidt, you know, he works East St. Louis. We've got to have other people doing that in the city of Chicago. You know, we've actually met with some black leaders up there. And again, all this sprung up, I think what they're calling this is, you know, turn Chicago red. They've got an organization. We've met with some of them. And we have got to not just meet with them once and then move on. We've got to be again. We've got to be supportive. And again, financially, what do we have to offer? It may not be much. Like Pritzker can self-fund himself if he wanted to run for president. It's really hard to compete with that. But there's a lot to be said for pounding the pavement and knocking on doors.
Yeah. And we don't have there's no other choice. We can't compete with J.B. Pritzker's money.
No.
But we can compete with his policy, his lack of scruples, his unwillingness to advocate for the taxpayer in the state of Illinois, and his advocacy for things that are oppositional to the majority of voters. We can advocate for that, and we can fight like hell to beat him. And you are absolutely right that it is a worthy cause. I like you talking about the turn Chicago red. I've contacted those people. We're in communication with them. And I wonder if they'd have any interest in coming down to St. Louis just for a bit to go around Southern Illinois to see if they could have any influence with us. I'd love to have that.
Yeah, I think they would. My understanding, they actually met with Terry Bryant, Senator Bryant. I think they're willing to meet with anybody, really. We just can't sit back and do nothing. We've got to work at this.
Yeah. Well, you're helping lead that charge here from Southern Illinois, Representative Freese, and we're thankful for your voice here, and we're pulling for you on this FOID card thing. People do need to go fill out those witness slips and contact your state representative, Republican or Democrat alike. Make sure today that they hear you say, if you're their constituent, Representative Freese wants to repeal the FOID card, and I want you to support them. I want you to support that effort. I want you to support David Freese. Reach out to your representative and make sure that they hear that. Thanks for being with us today to let us know more about what your efforts are trying to achieve.
My pleasure, and I love your show. I got it on every day at the office.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that as well. Let's see what we can do together. What do you think about that?
Let's do it.
All right. Thank you so much, Illinois State Representative David Freese. He represents Illinois' 115th district. There is a little bit of advantage, and I say little bit, which is to say more than none, to being a super minority underdog. Try whatever you can. There's nothing to lose because you're already as low as it could possibly get. The Illinois Republicans are in such a disparate hole when it comes to power and influence that they have. Now is the time to go big. Go big, fail big, succeed big. Constituents that are listening right now in the state of Illinois, if you've got a business, if you've got a residence in the state of Illinois, your voice better be heard, because your voice is going to be bigger than the super minority of Republicans in the General Assembly right now. Rattle the cage.
Yeah, the message, and I don't want to say of Republicans, but just the message of whatever Democrats is doing isn't working. It is breaking through right now. It's the machine. You're up against a machine. You know, this thing is well funded. It's very entrenched, but that message is breaking through. So what happens federally? Will people be able to see, oh wow, I want some of that in Illinois? I don't know. Hopefully that does start to happen, but I am encouraged that people that you wouldn't think are hearing the message and going, dang, that really resonates with me.
Yeah. I'm going to text Kevin Schmidt on the break. He talked about doing that coffee talk with his constituents in East St. Louis during the election. And I was like, I would like to go do that with you. He's like, sure, come. I'm going to schedule it.
Good.
Quick break. When we come back, more Annie Fry Show. Let's do a little chat on the YouTube live chat. Poll grade Doge. How are you feeling about it? Do you give him an A? Like super high fives all around. Complete success so far. A B/C passing grade, but maybe some room for improvement. Barely passing with a D or an F. Annie Fry YouTube channel, youtube.com/@AnnieFry. Find the live chat and the live broadcast and vote. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. The YouTube live chat poll for today, grade Doge. We got a standard grading philosophy here on the Annie Fry Show, which is you're passing, you're failing, you're somewhere in between, and we're bound by YouTube's. You only get four options, vote rule, which is really what it's all about.
Yeah, so we put B and C together.
B
always,
and C.
Always.
I mean, what's a B?
I don't know. You could put DF together, too, though.
No.
Because is like, yeah, you're below the line.
D, no. D is like, I found one grain of resolve.
Fair.
You want to give someone an F. If you want to give someone an F, you want to give them an F.
Oh,
you
don't
want to
give. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to give them the benefit of a D/F.
You know what?
F. Stamp it in red ink.
I'm going to alter my position here.
Okay.
You could make a case
I'm here to
for CD instead of BC being one. Because you're right. If you want to go big, you want to go A, you want to go F. I gotcha.
What kind of grades did you get in school?
A's, mostly.
S.
Satisfactory.
Yeah. EH's?
Yeah.
Satisfactory.
Mostly A's.
Mostly A's? How'd you feel when you got a B?
I didn't love it, but the older I got, the less I cared.
How'd you feel when you got a C?
Then I cared, because I didn't get many of them.
I think my final high school GPA was a 3.75. And it was all confusing because I went my freshman year to the Lutheran High School. Then I went my sophomore year to the public high school. And then I missed the Lutheran High School, so I went back to it my junior and senior years. And the public high school had a 5-point scale, and the Lutheran High School did not.
Yeah, disadvantage.
There were like hundredths of points that set people aside when you took honors classes and everything.
Right.
So, I felt like a 375 getting out of there was fine. And ironically, at the end of my senior year of high school, in order to graduate with honors, because the courses that I took at the public school at the time didn't transfer over the same way to qualify for honors or whatever, in order to graduate my high school career with honors, I would have had to take honors chemistry 2. And it was offered the same hour as journalism. And I wanted to go into journalism. And I wanted to run the fastest I could possibly run away from chemistry.
Me too.
It was, I mean, I remember the teacher at the time saying, if you like do the work in her class, if you do the work and you understand it and you can explain that you understand it, you're probably going to get an A. If you do the work and you don't really understand it, but you show up and you turn everything in, you're going to get a B. If you don't try, you're getting an F. It was like A, B, or F. I definitely got a B. Yeah. I was all about the B in that class and was very happy to not have to fail because I didn't understand any of it. Plus, I took chemistry at a different school, so it wasn't even in the same vein. But my dad told me, because I was stressed about it. I wanted to graduate with honors. I had the GPA to do it, but I needed to be able to have the honors credit because I didn't get any that translated for my sophomore year. My dad goes, Annie, if you want to wear another cord around your neck at graduation, I'll buy you one. Take journalism.
Good move.
And I was so I remember hearing him say that and shattering that expectation that I had put on my that I had put upon myself that this is what everybody wants me to do. Like, this is what you're supposed to do. And I remember my dad being like, You want to go to school for communications, take journalism. And I was the editor of the school newspaper. We had the yearbook in there. I didn't do as much of that because I was in charge of the newspaper. But it was maybe the most fulfilling class I took in high school was journalism, just to be able to do that. And like, what a smart move. And when you like after graduation is over and you didn't have that cord around your neck.
Who cares? Yeah,
nobody
really. Nobody
cares. When was the last time I mentioned my GPA in my life?
I can't even remember what my GPA was in high school. And I remember caring a lot at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, of course you cared.
Now, so, in college, I remember that I was 0.01% away from graduating cum laude.
Yeah? Me too!
But I only remember it because of the 0.01%.
I got a B in personalized shape up. I was so pissed at that teacher.
Oh, man.
He was like not a teacher's assistant, whatever you were, like a grad student.
Mm-hmm.
And it was his first class that he had ever taught, personalized shape up. I was mailing it in, people, but not in like effort. I had personalized shape up, basketball, and media law in the summer. So I was engrossed in media law and I got an A in media law, but I got a B in personalized shape up. This guy hit the first test that he gave this class. We had like 55 people in this class. I got a C on that first test and I might have set the curve.
Wow.
He was going hardcore and everyone was like, what the hell is going on here? It's personalized shape up. You're supposed to go work out, essentially. It's a kinesiology class. You're just doing this to like pass time. And it's for people who want to maybe teach PE or be in physical therapy, you know, that track. And then there's the media people who are like, I need one credit. And I got a B in that class and it kept me from graduating cum laude, just like you.
Journalism, also my favorite subject, excuse me, in high school.
Really?
I did not.
You and I are the same, Ryan.
Yeah, it's true. But I was not the editor of the page, of the newspaper, as you were. Yeah. I did have my own page, though.
I bet you did.
It was called the comedy page.
How'd you come up with that?
It was funny.
Oh, okay.
I would make up fake horoscopes for people.
Anyway, great Doge. We'll discuss that when we come back. And I have a question I need to ask Ryan Wiggins on the air about a very important interaction you had this weekend.
Oh, really?
That I found out about. I'm going to have to grill you on that when we come back. Don't go away.